And every person either sells himself as a slave, or he steals and he can't pay back, so he's sold by Beis Din as a slave. So he serves as a slave for 6 years. At the end of 6 years, he's supposed to go free. If he chooses not to go free, and he says that he wants to remain a slave, then the master takes him to the door, and with an awl, pierces his ear, his earlobe. And he remains a slave till Yovel. At Yovel, he goes out no matter what. So the Gemara says, why do we pierce his ear? Because Ozen Sheshom al Harsinai Avodayhen. If he sold himself, so the ear that heard on Harsinai that you're my Avodim, and not Avodim to Avodim, went and sold himself and was called another Adam. So he transgressed that idea of Avodayhen. And if he stole and was sold as a slave, then the Ozen Sheshom al Harsinai Lo Signov, right, the ear that heard on Harsinai, not allowed to steal, and he went and stole, he also gets his ear pierced. A few questions here. First of all, why do we pierce his ear after 6 years of serving as a slave? If we're piercing his ear for stealing, he stole already in the beginning of the 6 years, not at the end of the 6 years. If we're piercing his ear for selling himself as a slave, he already sold himself as a slave in the beginning. Why Dafka now, after 6 years, when he wants to remain? So on that, the answer could be that a person sells himself as a slave, there's always mitigating circumstances why a person would steal, especially a person who steals and can't pay back. Obviously, he didn't steal except because of circumstance. He needed the money. Otherwise, he would have money to pay back if he just stopped and stole. And he had to sell himself as a slave. Circumstances may have forced him. So a person sins the first time. His punishment is that he has to be a slave. Okay, let's see if you like being a slave. But after 6 years that he likes it, so first of all, he didn't now get a kapara for stealing, because he likes being a slave. And now he chooses to remain being a slave, that's already a much worse thing. Now he's already in ishtarish bechet, means becomes part of him. Till now, the sin was incidental, because there may have been contributing factors. But you want to remain, you continue the sin a second time, that already shows us something not right about yourself, not just circumstance. Okay, that's easy to answer. There's a bigger question here, though. Two bigger questions. First question is, the Isser of Lo Signov is not stealing. Lo Signov is kidnapping. The Lo Signov in the Aseres HaDibros is a death penalty like all the other Aseres HaDibros. It refers to kidnapping, Genevas Nefashos. It does not apply to stealing money. Stealing money is a different pasuk in Parshas Kedoshim, Lo Signovu. So it should have said, Ozen Sheshom al Harsinai, Lo Signovu, not Lo Signov. And that also, perhaps you could say the following answer. Two answers. One is that all the Aseres HaDibros, even though they refer to usually the most serious kind of prohibition, that include all the things that are under the umbrella of that prohibition. In other words, when the Torah said Lo Signovu, it meant every shade of stealing, from the most serious, which is kidnapping, to the most sublime kind of stealing, maybe stealing somebody's ideas, stealing somebody's sleep, whatever it may be. They're all included in Lo Signovu. It includes from the most serious to the most sublime. When it said Lo Sinaf, it means from the most serious mamish adultery to any lack of tznias is also included. And so on with all the Aseres HaDibros. So when it said Lo Signov, it included stealing too, even though the major thrust of it is kidnapping. But it includes kidnapping and all the other shades of stealing. That's one possible answer. Let's think of another answer. And that is, if we were to pierce his ear for stealing, we should do it right away in the beginning of the 6 years. So we said on that, well, maybe the 6 years of slavery are going to be the kapara. But if he likes it, then he got no kapara. So now he pierces ear at the end. But then we should pierce every ganav's ear. Every time a person steals, we should pierce his ear. Why only in this case? Therefore, I want to say that the idea is the following. We're not piercing his ear for stealing. We're piercing his ear for kidnapping. Who did he kidnap? Himself. He stole in such a way that he didn't have money to pay back, and he caused the Beis Din to have to sell him as a slave. That is called kidnapping. What's kidnapping? Gonev ish u'macharo. Somebody steals someone and sells him. Now, even though the Beis Din had to do that, but it is the action of kidnapping. You cause yourself to be sold as a slave. You cause the Beis Din to kidnap you. So you initiated what is on the surface kidnapping. Or you sold yourself as a slave and you became a slave when the Torah said not to have other slaves. Torah surely said that people shouldn't be selling other people, and you caused yourself to be sold. You caused yourself, instead of being God's servant, you became a person whose chattel, who's a commodity. You reduced yourself to a commodity. Or you reduced yourself to a slave to slaves. That's what we're piercing your ear. Not for the original stealing, but either for selling yourself as a slave or causing the Beis Din to sell you as a slave, which is, in a way, lo signov. Okay, so we answered that too. Now comes the major question. All of this was just a preface. You are students of biology, physiology in high school. Okay, where, what do we say? The ear that heard on Har Sinai that you're not allowed to steal, or you're not allowed to kidnap, or you're not allowed to sell yourself as a slave, should be pierced. Okay? Which part of your ear hears? The eardrum and beyond, the inner ear. This part that we pierce has nothing to do with hearing per se. It's a piece of cartilage that happens to hang out on the outside of your ear. It's the outer ear. But it really is not significant in hearing. So if we want to pierce the ear that heard on Har Sinai, why do we pierce your earlobe? That's not the ear that heard on Har Sinai. Secondly, it should have said the ear that didn't hear on Har Sinai, because obviously the guy didn't hear it. Not the ear that did hear on Har Sinai. And therefore I want to say the following. The problem with this person is not that he didn't hear it. But like we said last week, sometimes you can hear something, but you don't listen and don't take it personally. Like Cain. Cain heard, but he didn't take it personally. Yisro heard, the whole world heard, but Yisro took it personally. The slave was on Har Sinai. All of our neshamas were on Har Sinai. And we heard, Avodaihem. We heard Lo Signov. But obviously this person didn't think that God was talking to him. He thought he was talking to other people. He didn't take it personally. What is the function of this part of the ear? If the Gemara says it's like an afarcheses. It's like a funnel. This part of the ear directs the sound to you. It collects the sound. Without this part of the ear, a lot of sound would just pass you by. The fact that we have an outer ear collects the sound and directs it personally to you. That's exactly the problem with this person. The ear that heard on Har Sinai, but the outer ear didn't collect it and make it personal. It just, you heard it, but you didn't think it was you. You let it just pass you by. So which part of the ear was problematic? This part, not the inner ear. You heard, but you didn't take it seriously to yourself. So that's why we pierce the earlobe, because the problem with this person is not that he didn't hear, but he didn't listen and take it personally. And the part of the ear that personalizes the sound is the outer ear. Now, with that, I want to explain something else. The Gemara says that why are our earlobes pliable, flexible? So in case you hear Lashon Hara, you can bend the earlobe in and it serves as a ready-made earplug, which you carry with you all the time. Then there's another Gemara. The Gemara says, why are the fingers tapered at the end? Our fingers are not as thick at the end as they are in the middle. So the Gemara says, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu made fingers in such a way that if you'll hear Lashon Hara, you can put your fingers in your ears and not hear the Lashon Hara. There's an obvious question here. Why do you need fingers and earlobes to avoid Lashon Hara? One should be enough. And in addition, without fingers, earlobes are useless, right? Unless you really can control your earlobes without touching them, right? Most people can't bend them into their ear. You need fingers to bend them into your ear. So if you have fingers already, what do you need earlobes? So, and I have a bigger question than that. Okay, so first of all, these two Gemaras are difficult because each one says that a different part of the body is needed to avoid Lashon Hara. And if you have fingers, why do you need the earlobes? Because anyway, you're going to have to use your fingers to push your earlobes in the ear. So you just might as well use your fingers. I have a bigger question. Forget about your fingers and your earlobes. I have a better way to avoid Lashon Hara. It's called feet. Walk away. Stand there like an idiot with your feet, with your fingers in your ears or your earlobes in your ears. Just walk away. Right? The Chafetz Chaim says sometimes it's difficult to walk away. You're embarrassed or you get into trouble or who knows, you get endangered. So then you could stay where you are and not listen. Right? But in those kind of situations, you don't have to put your fingers in your ears either, because then the same danger would be. So if you can walk away, walk away. If you can't walk away, it's not going to help to put your fingers in your ears, so why don't you just walk away? Instead of standing there like an idiot with your fingers or your earlobes in your ears. And therefore, I want to say the following. It obviously doesn't mean literally that you have to stick your fingers in your ears. It means that you have to avoid listening to the Lashon Hara in some way. And the example is putting your fingers in your ears, putting your earlobes in your ears, or taka walking away. And therefore, I want to say there are three kinds of Lashon Hara. And each method applies to a different kind of Lashon Hara. First kind of Lashon Hara. The first kind of Lashon Hara comes from a Baal Lashon Hara. A Baal Lashon Hara is somebody who is a professional. He does this as a craft. He enjoys speaking Lashon Hara, Motzi Shemra, and he's a really evil person. That person, you should use your feet and avoid. Get out of his presence. You should not have any contact with such an evil person. However, there's a second kind of Lashon Hara. The kind of Lashon Hara that most of us speak every once in a while. We are not evil people. We are not professional slanderers. We just sometimes fall into the trap of speaking Lashon Hara. We're not really bad people, but at the time that we're speaking Lashon Hara, we are doing something that is bad. Now, if the person who we are relating to would walk away from us, it would give the impression that we are bad people and you can't have contact with us. And that's wrong. So you don't use that body language of walking away. For that person, you take your fingers, put them in your ears, and I don't mean literally, but this is the body language, and basically give the message to the person as follows. I'm not walking away from you. You are basically not a bad person. I don't have to disassociate myself with you, but I have to disassociate myself from what you're doing right now. So I'm going to put my fingers in my ears so I don't hear what you're saying. When you finish, could you tap me on the shoulder? I'll take my fingers out. I'd be glad to have a connection to you because you're basically not an evil person, but at this moment, you're doing something bad. You're doing something wrong, which I can't associate with. I can associate with you, but I can't associate with what you're doing right now. Masha Enkein, the first person, I can't associate with you. You're an evil person. Walk away from it. Okay, now there's a third kind of Lashon Hara. Example. I have a daughter. I have a lot of daughters, but I'm just saying, figuratively speaking. And she is in the parish of Shiduchim. And somebody suggested a certain boy for her. And I want to find out about this boy. And I'm walking with a friend of mine, and I see somebody coming who knows this boy. Now, I'm going to ask that person, what do you know about this person? Now, that third person knows that this boy is really, really bad. Right? He has a bunch of things to tell me not to touch this guy with a 10-foot pole, right, and discourage your daughter from ever meeting this guy. He is really rotten to the core. And he has a lot to tell me. Okay. Now, he starts to open his mouth and start to say, boy, I have a lot to tell you about this guy. Now, my friend is walking with me, and he doesn't have any daughters. And he doesn't have to listen to this. He doesn't have to know anything about this guy. Zero. So for him, it's Lashon Hara. For me, not only is it not Lashon Hara, but it's something that's a mitzvah for that other person to tell me, because if he doesn't tell me, who knows what's going to happen to my poor daughter. So he has to tell me graphically what's wrong with this guy, as long as he doesn't exaggerate, he doesn't have anything personally against the guy, and whatever. And there's a toelis. Okay? All those conditions are met. But the friend who's walking with me doesn't have to hear any of that. For him, there's no toelis. For him, it's 100% awesome. Now, if my friend walks away, he's giving the impression that what's going on here is amongst two evil people we can't associate with. So you can't do that. If he stands there and sticks his fingers in his ear, he's giving the impression that this is Lashon Hara, and when you finish speaking to Lashon Hara, I'll take my fingers out of the ears, and that would warn the person who's telling me this information not to tell it. I don't want to speak Lashon Hara. Or me not to listen to it. And that's wrong. I have to listen, and he has to say it. It's a mitzvah. Therefore, the third body language is, take your earlobes and bend them in. Why? Because we said the earlobe is the part of the ear that makes the sound personalized. And therefore, by bending my earlobes in, I'm basically making the following statement. The two of you are not bad people from what you're doing because you're doing a mitzvah. I'm not going to walk away from you. And what you're speaking is not Lashon Hara. Because for you, it's necessary to say and hear. But for me, it's Lashon Hara. Therefore, I'm taking the part of my ear that makes the thing personalized to me and closing off my ear. I'm not sticking my fingers in my ears because that would imply that what you're speaking is Lashon Hara. But I'm putting my earlobes in my ears to show that what you're speaking for you is not Lashon Hara. But for me, it is. And therefore, there's three kinds of body language that deals with the three kinds of Lashon Hara. Okay, any questions on that? Okay, let's go to the next thing. Okay. The Pasuk says, Ve'eile ha-mishpatim asher tosim lifnehem. These are the mishpatim that you put before the Jewish people, that are mishpatim, even though the nations of the world also have mishpatim. But our mishpatim are different. So different that the Torah says, the Tehillim says, Lo osa chen l'chol goy, u'mishpatim bal yida'um hallelujah. Right? The Rabbanu Shel Olam, Magid Dvarav li'Yakov, Chukov u'mishpatov li'Yisrael, Lo osa chen l'chol goy, u'mishpatim bal yida'um. The Rabbanu Shel Olam did not let the nations of the world know mishpatim. Mishpatim are civil law. Laws that basically between man and man that are rational laws, for the most part, rational laws. So, it doesn't make sense. Mishpatim bal yada'um? The nations of the world have rational laws. They have civil law. They have a mitzvah to create a court system. So if anything, God didn't tell them the chukim. He didn't tell them the religious laws. But mishpatim bal yadom. If anything, goyim have as much mishpatim as we do. The answer is that there's a very big difference between mishpatei Hashem and mishpatei bnei Adam. The goyim were not given mishpatim by the Rabbanu Shel Olam. They create their own mishpatim. And their mishpatim are based on logic, totally. And therefore they can change. What is in one situation a mishpat, in a different situation may be different. What in one era is okay, in another era may be different. And therefore the mishpatim of Bnei Adam change. They're not absolute. They're relative to what will work in bringing harmony and order to the world. That's the basis of Mishpatei Bnei Adam. But Mishpatim of the Rabbanu Shel Olam, those Mishpatim are as much Chukim as anything else. Example. The black and white areas of murder is pretty much logical, rational, makes sense not to murder people, right? So non-Jews also have a law on the books not to murder. How about the gray areas of murder? Example. You have a person who's 119 years old, doesn't have any teeth, can't hear, basically can't see, and he's terribly suffering, really bad off. He has some kind of really painful disease, and there's no way of freeing him from the pain. And he's 119 and a half, so he doesn't have too much time left. And he begs you, put me out of my misery. Please, give me an overdose of morphine and just let me die. According to the Torah, that's murder. If you do it, you're a murderer. Is it rational? Does it make sense rationally not to kill that person? He asks you. He's in terrible pain. His life is almost worthless. Is it rationally murder? No. Is it usher? Yes. Is that something that a non-Jew could understand? No. How about abortion? I wouldn't want to argue against a pro-abortionist from simply a rational point of view. From a rational point of view, there is a very rational case for abortion. It's a woman's body. She chose to get pregnant or didn't choose to get pregnant, and she didn't want this child, and it's not a viable human being, and it's part of her body, and she wants to get rid of this child before it's born. Is there a case rationally for that? I would say so. Other arguments against? Yeah. But either side is rational. Is it usher? 100%. Why? Because the Torah said it's awesome. Not because rationale says. So there's a tremendous difference between the mishpatim of Bnei Adam, which are totally based on rationale, and the mishpatim of the Rabbanu Shel Olam, which as much as they are mishpatim, they're chukim. Every chok has some rationale to it. Even Paraduma, how much has been written on the ideas behind Paraduma. But in the end, it's a chok. Most of it is beyond understanding. It's super rational. Murder, a good portion of it is rational, but a good portion of it is not. The difference between a chok and a mishpat is a chok predominantly is not rational, and a mishpat predominantly is. But both of them, in the end, are chukim. There's no 100% rational reason for any of them. And that's why when the Torah was offered to the non-Jews and they asked what's in it, HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Esav not to murder, Yishmael not to steal, L'chora, those are mitzvahs they have to keep anyway because of Shev Mitzvah Bnei Noach. So what was it going to help not to get to accept the Torah? They had to keep those mitzvahs anyway. So one answer is keeping those mitzvahs as a ben noach basically allowed them to define those mitzvahs according to their rationale and their intelligence, intellect. But if they would have accepted the Torah, then basically they would have had to accept God's definition. And then it would be totally chukim. All those gray areas which don't make sense rationally, which are beyond rationale, that they didn't want. And therefore, every mishpat is a chok, and every chok is a mishpat. There is no line of demarcation 100% between bein adam lechaveiro and bein adam lemakom. Every law that's bein adam lechaveiro has an aspect of bein adam lemakom in it. And every law of bein adam lemakom has also an aspect of bein adam lechaveiro, because it affects everybody. There's no such thing in this world of something that doesn't affect other human beings. This concept of, you know, consenting adults. As long as everybody agrees and you're not harming anybody, so to say, then it's okay to do whatever you want in the privacy of your own home or the privacy of your own bedroom. It's not a Torah concept. Because ultimately, we believe that sinning in a way that is bein adam lemakom affects other people. It's like spiritual pollution. Imagine, today we can understand it a little bit, even though the example I'm going to give you is absurd, but in the absurdity you can understand the idea. Today, it's pretty clear, or not clear, but it's held by some, by a lot of people, that fluorocarbons in spray deodorants or spray other things harm the ozone layer of the atmosphere and breaks it up and lets in radiation that could be very, very damaging to the climate and to people or whatever. Let's take it to the absurd. Let's say that every time you sprayed your deodorant can, it released fluorocarbons into the atmosphere, which opened up a window in the ozone layer somewhere on the other side of the world, let in radiation that gave 10,000 people cancer on the spot. Let's say it was very clear that that's what happened, okay? Could you say, well, I'm going into my bedroom and I am going to spray my own personal underarm and it's nobody else's business? Would you say that's the case? No, it's a lot of people's business. All those 10,000 Chinese people are going to get cancer because you sprayed your underarm. It's their business also. Because what you do affects the world. It's a pollutant. So no one can say everything that's bein adam lemakom has implications to bein adam lechaveiro. And every bein adam lechaveiro has implications bein adam lemakom, because we are created in a divine image, and acting in a way that is not proper between people is not acting proper in a way that's between you and God either, because God expects you to act like a mensch. And therefore, even if it affects nobody else, but it affects God, and if it affects somebody else, it affects God too, your relationship with God. Just to give you a few examples from the Sedra of things that on the surface appear to be mishpatim that are bein adam lechaveiro, and they have bein adam lemakom implications. Things that seem to be clearly bein adam lemakom and have bein adam lechaveiro implications. The opposite. Let me give you a few examples. First example. Halacha of what seems to be a simple bein adam lechaveiro halacha. Somebody steals an ox and he sells it or slaughters it, and he's caught. He has to pay 5 times the value of the ox. If he steals a seh, a lamb, he has to pay, in the same situation, he sells it or slaughters it, and he's caught, he has to pay 4 times the value of the lamb. Simple idea, it's a knas, it's a fine, because when you steal a person's money, so you just deprive them of his money. But if you steal his lamb or his what's it called, his shore, especially his shore, you deprive him of working with his tools. Like stealing a guy's car, and he needs it for his business. So you didn't just steal the thing. You stole away, the implications are, you stole away his livelihood, his ability to work, to plow. So therefore, there's a knas. But 5 times, 4 times, why this one 5 and this one 4? So one of the reasons is because when you steal an ox, you lead it on the ground. And it's not embarrassing to lead an ox in the street. In those days, a lot of people did it. But when you steal a lamb, you don't lead it by a leash, you carry it. And the person who stole it embarrassed himself by having to carry this lamb publicly. It's an embarrassing situation, even if it's your own lamb. So therefore, the Torah had rachmanis on him. Since anyway embarrassed himself by carrying the lamb, we take off 1 time. You only have to pay 4 times, not 5 times. Now, think about it. That makes any sense? The guy stole the thing. He chose to steal the lamb. And the money he's paying is to compensate the person who was stolen from. What does my embarrassment have to do with taking 1 time off, paying him the fine? But the idea is that this is not just a rational Bein Adam L'Chaveiro law. The Bein Adam L'Makom also, the Kapara, the Tikkun, is also part of it. And if part of my act of stealing brought me embarrassment, then part of the sin is wiped away because of the embarrassment, because of the tsar. And therefore, only pay 4, not 5. It's not a totally Bein Adam L'Chaveiro law. There is an aspect over here of Bein Adam L'Makom. In addition, there in Parshas Kisisa, the Torah says that the people who were killed, I think by the plague of what's it called, after the Chet HaEgel, it says that about v'naflu min ha'am kishloshes alfei ish. The people who died from the plague after the Chet HaEgel were kishloshes alfei ish, usually about 3,000. There's only one problem. The Medrash says on the pasuk in Koheles, achas me elef matzasi, v'isha achas me elu lo matzasi. I found 1 man out of 1,000 and no women. And the Medrash says that pasuk is referring to Chet HaEgel. By the Chet HaEgel, 1 man out of every 1,000 in the desert sinned. Okay? But no women sinned. Achas me elef matzasi, 1 man out of every 1,000 was found to be a sinner by the Chet HaEgel, the isha achas lo matzasi, and no woman sinned by the Chet HaEgel. Okay. According to this Medrash, achas me elef, how many men were there? Between 20 and 60, 600,000. How much would be 1 out of 1,000? 600. So why were 3,000 people killed by God for serving the eagle when only 600 served the eagle? Was it 3,000 or was it 600? Says the Vilna Gaon, the concept of the eagle, which we're not going to go into now, just going to mention it in a passing way. Concept of the eagle was they felt that Moshe Rabbeinu was a necessary intermediary between them and God. Moshe Rabbeinu channeled the influence from God to them, and he was necessary to be the receiving station of God's influence and pass it on to them. And now the receiving station was gone. Moshe is no longer around. That's what they thought. And we need something else to direct God's influence to us. It doesn't happen directly. We need, it's like the radio station is broadcasting, but you need a receiver to pick it up. If you don't have a receiver, you're not going to get what's being broadcast. God is constantly broadcasting influence to the world. Plenty. But you need some receiver to gather that influence and direct it towards you. So as long as Moshe Rabbeinu was alive, they thought Moshe Rabbeinu did that. Now Moshe's gone. So what do they need, say the Rishonim? They need the power to survive in the desert. That is the power of Parnassa. Where does the power of Parnassa come from? So God has a chariot, which means various powers that he created through which he guides and directs the world. One of the tsuros on his chariot is a shore, is an ox. Again, it's a spiritual power, but represents what an ox in this world represents, plowing, planting, and creating food in a field. That's the power of the ox. And therefore, Klal Yisrael basically took that power, that the receiving station of the power of the ox, made an eagle that would harness that spiritual power and direct it towards them. And they survive in the desert without a Moshe Rabbeinu now, because they have that same receiving station through the power of the ox represented by the eagle. Okay. So bottom line, says the Vilna Gaon, what was their sin? They stole the ox from God's Merkava, meaning that they had no reason or right to do that. But they stole it. They usurped it wrongly. When you steal an ox, what do you pay back? 5 times. 5 times 600 is 3,000. That's what it says. Really, 600 people served the eagle. But it was like 3,000, kishloshes, because when you steal an ox, you have to really pay back 5 times. So the 600 that were killed were considered like 3,000 based on the sin that they did of stealing this ox. So even though the halacha in the Torah is basically talking about a physical ox that you steal from a physical human being, and the idea is remuneration with a fine for stealing this guy's ox, it has spiritual, cosmic implications also way beyond the simple, rational Bein Olam L'Chaveiro mitzvah. Okay, now we'll go the other way. A situation that seems to be not understandable Bein Olam L'Chaveiro, but the Bein Olam L'Makom plays on the Bein Olam L'Chaveiro. What's the case? The following. And I think this is what the Rashbam says. If it's not, I think it's a nice pshat anyway, but I think this is the meaning of a Rashbam. It says like this. I loan somebody money. Okay? Loan him $1,000. And I'm afraid that he just may pick up and run away and never pay me back my money. So I have the right to take a security, a mashkon. So I take his Sealy mattress as a mashkon. It's worth $500. So if he doesn't pay me, at least I got the mattress. I can sell it for $300 and make back some of my money. Okay. So I'm holding on to his mattress so he doesn't abscond with it, with my money. Comes nighttime, the Torah says, give him back his mattress, because you don't want to prevent him from sleeping on his silly mattress. He doesn't have any other mattresses. And you wouldn't want to sleep on the floor. So give it back to him. What do you mean give it back to him? I'm holding this as security for the loan. If I give it back to him, he may run away with the mattress in the middle of the night. I'll never get my money back. No. The Rebbe Shlom says, give him back the mattress. Okay. I give him back the mattress, and I fulfill the mitzvah. What happens if one night I say, you know what, I get this feeling that this guy is going to run away, he's not going to pay me my money, and I really can't afford to lose $1,000. And therefore, I'm not giving him back his mattress, because I give him back the mattress, he's going to run away with it. And I'm afraid. So I hold on to the mattress overnight. Okay, now I loaned this money, a guy $1,000, interest-free. All I did was take his mattress as security, and now all I did was one night not give it back to him because I'm afraid that he may run away with it. Okay? I have no proof, but I have this gut feeling that he's going to disappear if I give him back his mattress. So I don't give him back the mattress, which is wrong. Now the guy goes, and he davens to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Ribbono Shel Olam, give this guy what he deserves. He took away my mattress. I didn't give it back. I didn't have a chance to sleep on my Sealy mattress. I had to sleep on the floor, or I had to sleep on another mattress. Now, if you were God, how would you relate to this guy's tefillah? No? I'll tell you how I would relate to him. What a kufi tova. This guy loaned you $1,000 interest-free. He had perhaps reason to suspect that you may, what's it called, that you may be... it's not going to explode, is it? That you may run away. All he did was hold back your Sealy mattress. And you have the chutzpah to daven that I should punish him? Because, Lemaisa, this guy loaned you the money interest-free. Isn't that reason to have Akoras HaTov? Now all you can see is what he didn't do for you? I would really zap this guy with a lightning bolt. Right? Well, chutzpah. What does the Torah say? Vishomati kichanun oni. I will hear the prayers of this oni because I am gracious. Be gracious. Be gracious to this guy who gave him the $1,000 interest free. Doesn't that count? Because this guy davens because he didn't get his mattress back. God's going to listen to him because he's chanunani, because he's gracious. Be gracious to the rich guy who loaned him the money free of interest. That's something. I think the Rashbam says the following. He doesn't say it in all those words, but I think this is the intent. We have a mitzvah to emulate HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Mahu rachum, afatotei rachum, mahu chanun, afatotei chanun. Right? Hashem, Hashem, keo rachum v'chanun, v'holachto bidrochav. That is a mitzvah bein odom l'makom, to emulate God's midos. What is the midah of chanun, as opposed to rachum? Rachum is to have mercy on people who deserve the mercy. Chanun is totally free, matnas chinam. Free chesed, where even the person doesn't deserve it, but I should be gracious. God is gracious even to people who don't deserve it. So I have a mitzvah to emulate God. Is there reason to say that protecting my interests and considering the fact that I loaned this guy $1,000 interest free, that I'm a good guy? Yeah. Does the Ribbono Shel Olam really have a right, or a right? Does he have a reason to listen to the tefillah of this guy who's complaining about me because I didn't give him back his bed? Probably not deserved. But should I have given back the bed even though undeserved? Yeah, why? Not because of the Bein Olam L'Chaveiro, because I have a mitzvah to emulate God and be a chanun. And this was an opportunity to be a chanun. And I didn't. And therefore, because of my Bein Adam L'Makom sin, God is going to listen to the tefillah of this ani, even though Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, it doesn't seem to hold any water. So we see here a total mixture of Bein Adam L'Chaveiro and Bein Adam L'Makom, where there's no clear line that separates between them. Okay. Another situation where we can learn from a religious law, Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. The Torah says that if you have an animal that's a trefa, okay, even though we use that term very loosely, but it has a very specific meaning. An animal that's a trefa is an animal that has some kind of disease that even if you shecht it, it's not kosher. Because it would have probably died from that disease that it had. And the case that the Torah gives of what kind of disease is an inflicted disease by a wild animal. A
lion, a wolf, gets into the herd and mauls one of the sheep, digs its claws into its chest, and puts a hole in the lung. The animal's still alive, but has a hole in its lung, right? And the venom of the claws, the infection, is probably going to die with a hole in its lung, right, caused by these claws. If you go and shech that animal, it's not kosher. It's treif. It's a treif. Treif. Torah says you can't eat it. Okay. That's the classic example of a treifa, an animal in your herd that was mauled by a wild animal and caused a hole in its brain, hole in its lung, or one of other 18 specific things that render the animal a treifa. So the Torah says what to do with the treifa. Lakelev tashlichanoso. Throw it to the dogs. So you're familiar with the Medrash. The Medrash says, why were the dogs zoche to get the treifas? Because they didn't bark in Mitzrayim. That's a Medrash. What's a simple meaning? Why does the Torah say throw the meat to the dog? So the Balei HaTosfos say, the Daz Zakenu Balei HaTosfos says the following. Most herds of sheep have dogs that help the shepherd the sheep. Sheep dogs. And the job of the dog is to protect the flock, scare away wild animals or whatever. And therefore, if you have an animal from the flock that became prohibited to eat, give the dog his reward for watching the herd all the time. He's been a faithful dog watching the herd. So now you have an animal from the herd that you can't eat, give it to the dog. That's the Daz Zakenu. There's one big problem here. Do you know why you have an animal you can't eat? Because the dog didn't do his job. Because had he done his job, he would have scared away the wild animal, and that animal would not have been mauled. It was mauled because the dog didn't do his job. So now you're rewarding the dog for not doing his job. That doesn't make any sense. Says the Daz Zakenu, no. But he did his job other times. He saved this flock many times. He faithfully guarded the flock. One time he wasn't successful. So you should let that one time he wasn't successful erase all the Hakoras HaTov that you owe this dog from all the other times? No. Still, show your Hakoras HaTov for the other times. Even though this time he did something, Taka, that was negative. Think for a second. That's how you treat a dog, right? You shouldn't erase all the good the dog did because one time he did something bad. How do people function with other people? Right? You have friends that done you favors and you've done them favors and a very, very positive relationship. And then one day the friend does something not nice to you. What is the reaction of many people in that situation? Erase them from your book. That's it. Never talk to them again. Now they become your enemy. I know people like that for years. Years. And they can't even remember why. But they know that something happened. And I remember when I first became a rabbi, so in the Kehillah I was, there were two very influential and respectable people in the Kehillah that didn't speak to each other. They had this feud, and it was from before I came to the Kehillah, and each one had their friends, so it was like two cliques, and if you were this one's friend, you weren't this one's friend, and they didn't talk to each other, and it was really, it destroyed it was very divisive in the community. So I came in, a new rabbi, and I decided that's time enough that this has to be solved. So I invited them both to my office, not telling them the other one's going to be there. They thought that they're the only person invited, right, for an appointment. And they come to my office and they see they're both there. Like, you know, what's... And it was too late to, like, run away. And they were embarrassed also for me. So I sat them, both of them down. I said, look, your personal feud is dividing this community. We've got to settle it. So I want to hear from both of you one at a time. We'll flip a coin. Who goes first? why you don't speak to each other. What is the cause of this tremendous hatred between the two of you? And there's silence. Neither one could remember why, what happened that they don't speak to each other. Each one said, I know it was something important, I just can't put my finger on it, I don't remember what it was. That's how people are. And it could be these people were friends for years. And then one of them, or each one thinks the other one, did something not nice, and from that point on, that's it. Just erased him from your book, right? You don't do that to a dog. That's what the Torah says. How do you do that to a human being? So we can learn from this kashrus halacha, bein olam lamakom, a tremendous lesson of how to treat people. So again, there's no clear line of demarcation between mitzvahs that are bein adam lechaveiro, seemingly rational mitzvahs between man and man that have implications to things that are spiritual, and seemingly spiritual kashrus halachas that have implications between man and man. That's the mishpatim bal yada'um. Those kinds of mishpatim that Rabban Shalom didn't tell the goyim. Their mishpatim are purely between man and man, situational ethics, what is, in this situation, good for society, that'll keep society in harmony. That's all. It doesn't go beyond that. Our mishpatim, and that's one of the reasons why you're not allowed to go to a secular court. Because even if the secular court will have the same exact halacha, but it's not the same halacha. Because our halacha is a combination of bein adam lamakom, bein adam lechaveiro, almost in every situation.